And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. Recently, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network held a webinar which basically posed a question asking, what is a municipal light plant? It's kind of an introductory discussion of what municipal light plants are. And so I thought we would play that back. The speaker will be Logan Malik, who is the Clean Energy Director at MCAN and is an expert on what MLPs are, municipal light plants are. Of course, such a discussion is interesting, even if you don't live in an MLP town, because understanding what an MLP is gives you some information on what your IOU, that is to say, your investor-owned utility, what that is, in contrast. So it's a useful exercise. I hope you'll enjoy listening in. Here you go.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. As Malia said, my name is Logan Malik, and I'm the Clean Energy Director here at the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. And I'm so grateful that you all are here to join us. I'm so grateful to our wonderful panel of speakers for being willing to tell us all about their experience on the light boards, their respective light boards. During my presentation, I'm going to just make sure that all of the foundational information is kind of covered. I'm going to talk a little bit about what municipal light plants are, how they differ from investor-owned utilities, and why advocacy in MLPs, I'm going to start using MLPs for municipal light plants, is so important across the Commonwealth. So before I do that, I do just want to tell you a little bit about MCAN. MCAN was founded back in 2000, and we are an organization that is primarily focused on providing a network of expertise to help town level groups take action on climate locally. And we do this specifically, you know, we have now 65 chapters across the Commonwealth. And we really work to provide them with the resources, the technical knowledge, and the support that they need. One of our key focuses is municipal light plants, because there is so much opportunity to take action in these communities specifically. And for us, it's all about local action. We believe that there is so much power that can come from municipal level and you know, slightly bigger. That's where all of the action and all of the change comes from, and then it bubbles on up. And that's what we're really focused on supporting. So with that being said, I do want to talk a little bit about what an MLP is. And in order to do that, I just need you, it's important that folks understand that there are currently two types of electric utilities in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. There are investor-owned utilities, also known as IOUs. And these are for-profit utilities that are owned by private shareholders. When you know, thinking of an IOU, what is an IOU? It's your National Grid, your Eversource, your Unitil. Those are the investor-owned utilities that operate in Massachusetts. And then you have the second type of utility, which is called a municipal light plant. These are nonprofit utilities that are owned and operated by their municipalities and at the community level. There are 41 MLPs across the Commonwealth. They provide services to a total of 50 municipalities across Massachusetts, and they represent about 14% of the state's total electricity. So not an insignificant portion. This is a map of MLPs, and it really gives you a sense of where they're located. And one thing that you might notice is they are everywhere. You have some located way out in Western Mass, some in Central Mass, on the North Shore, on the South Shore. And so there is a whole bunch of geographic diversity across MLPs. And as you might expect, because of that, there is also a whole bunch of diversity when you're looking at a numerous other factors. So, you know, whether or not an MLP is in a rural community or an urban community, whether or not, you know, the size of that, the MLP, some of them can provide services for 500 customers, others 40,000 customers. The breakdown of customers, you know, the percentage of customers that are residential customers or commercial entities, at the income level of the communities that these MLPs are serving, you know, varies significantly. So all of this just should give you a sense that these communities, while they are lumped in as MLPs, they are very diverse in the needs that they have, their interests, and their priorities. And in order to understand MLPs, it's really important that you understand how their governance structure is different from investor-owned utilities. So on the right side over here where my mouse is, you can see the investor-owned utility governance structure. And you see that there at the top are private utility shareholders. These are not your customers. They are instead private and individual investors that buy shares of the utility and then, you know, seek to essentially generate a profit through the shares that they have purchased. Now, these shareholders elect a board of directors, and these board of directors are then subsequently responsible for appointing a CEO. The CEO is then responsible for carrying out the day-to-day operations of the utility and ensuring that the needs and the interests of the private utility shareholders are met. As you might expect, these needs may differ from the needs of a customer, and they are actually, you know, primarily focused on getting large profit margins and ensuring, you know, just high annual returns year over year. This differs significantly from an MLP structure, which is shown on the left side. And you can see the top, you know, the top group is significantly and very importantly different. So instead of a private utility shareholder, they are the local community. And the structure is very similar to how you imagine, you know, the structure of a local town. In a local town, you see that local community members elect a board of selectmen or a city council who are then responsible in a town for appointing a town manager. And that town manager is then responsible for carrying out the duties and the mission of the board of selectmen, which is you know, ultimately responsible to the local community members. With a municipal light plant and a municipal light board, it is very similar. In most instances, not all, a commission or a light board is elected by community members. In other instances, they'll be appointed by either a board of selectmen or by a mayor or a city council. Once they are established, they are then responsible for appointing or hiring a general manager. And that general manager is responsible for carrying out the day-to-day operations and mission of both the light board and the community. But you can kind of see with the MLP governance structure, it all goes back to community. And that is a theme that I'm going to come back to multiple times. So this structure provides several unique benefits to MLP communities that are not available to communities that are served by investor-owned utilities. And the three of the benefits that I'm going to discuss today are the fact that residents play an important role in decision-making, that MLPs have the ability to prioritize the needs of their local community. And the third one, which is a little bit different, but nonetheless important, MLPs are legally permitted to own and operate energy generation. So there are several other benefits that I'm sure folks on the call are aware of, and that, you know, we could talk about numerous other benefits, but for the time being, I'm going to focus on these and I'm going to discuss them in a little bit more detail. So the first is the community role in MLPs. As I mentioned earlier, the community is responsible for electing their light board or their commissioners. And this is the case in many communities where it's a direct, you know, they are directly choosing who is on the board. In other instances, when they're not directly choosing, they are still choosing the people who are responsible for making that decision. So they have the ability to choose the makeup of those boards. They're also able to weigh, folks in these communities are able to weigh in on decision-making. And they can do that through, you know, regular commissioner meetings that happen on a periodic basis and that are available to the public. You know, that is a useful way to kind of get your foot in the door, to understand what's going on in your MLP, and then to provide public comment. But it does go beyond that. Residents really are capable of affecting change in policy, operations, and investment through emphasizing their priorities and advocating for change. This is a unique piece of, you know, this is, I'd say, more unique and a real benefit in MLP communities. You know, these MLPs are a part of a democratic institution, of a local democratic institution. And the, you know, the best way to keep a democratic institution healthy is through engagement. You can see tangible results if you engage in your MLP's, you know, regular operations in a respective and productive, respectful and productive way. And the reason why that engagement is so important is and so valuable is that MLPs have the capacity to prioritize local needs. As nonprofit organizations, they don't need to only be thinking about the bottom line, about how much, you know, each decision is going to produce a profit. Instead, they can think about, well, what are the needs and the interests of my community, and how can we, you know, best achieve that? And so in many cases, what this looks like, MLPs prioritizing local needs, looks like providing local rates and resiliency. But it's very important to keep in mind that it does not only need to be those aspects. And I will say MLPs do a great job in keeping rates low. They have some of the lowest rates for customers in the state, as well as providing a resilient energy system. But we can, and you know, residents can ask and you know, call for different priorities. And that can include, you know, increasing the use of clean energy, ensuring that there are large and substantial energy efficiency programs available to customers, ensuring that we are mitigating climate change as effectively as possible. The list really does go, you know, it can really be anything. And I think that is very important to keep in mind. Unlike these investor-owned utilities, MLPs really can prioritize the needs of their customers. The final benefit that I do just want to discuss is that MLPs can own generation. And so it might come as a shock to some, but the investor-owned utilities that we are all familiar with, the Eversources, the National Grid, they do not own their energy generation facilities. They don't own solar, they don't own wind, they don't own natural gas, coal, et cetera. Instead, they are focused primarily on, you know, contracting for those resources and then delivering those resources to their customers. MLPs, on the other hand, have the ability to own energy generation facilities. And this is a powerful tool, especially when we're talking about climate action. It's a powerful tool to increase clean energy generation. As we've seen, MLPs have been some of the initial, you know, and leadership investors, if you will, who are kind of out in front. And I think a great example is the Berkshire Wind facility, which is the largest onshore wind facility in the Commonwealth. That facility is entirely owned and operated by MLPs and their associations. A key caveat is with this great power or this greater power comes a greater responsibility. So just because this increased capacity enables MLPs to an additional tool to increase clean energy doesn't mean that they are necessarily going to use it to invest in clean energy resources. In fact, you know, they could just as easily invest in natural gas, coal facilities, what have you. Not to say that they do invest in coal, but so this makes it all the more important that residents get involved, that residents make it very clear that clean energy is their priority and that investments in clean energy is a must moving forward for their community. Again, community involvement is so central to an MLP taking action and making the right investments, changing their operations to address the climate crisis that we're facing today. So I've kind of talked about some of the benefits of MLPs, and I do just want to, before I turn the mic over to Larissa, I do just want to briefly discuss how MLPs are regulated differently. And as a result, the current action that is taking place in MLPs, specifically with respect to combating the climate crisis. So one of the things that we've seen since the formation of MLPs way back in 1892, I believe the first one that was established was Wellesley's Municipal Light Plant, is that the legislature has treated MLPs very differently from investor-owned utilities. Specifically, when it comes to climate change and climate policy, MLPs have kind of been left out of a lot of the key landmark climate policies that we see as foundational to addressing the climate crisis in the Commonwealth. And two examples of this is the Renewable Portfolio Standard and the Clean Energy Standard. And both of these policies are really focused on essentially requiring that investor-owned utilities increase the percentage of clean energy that they distribute to customers year over year to ensure that we are transitioning in a timely manner. And up until 2021, when the Next Generation Climate Roadmap Bill was passed, MLPs had no such requirement. They did not, you know, they frankly could have had 0% clean energy in their mix because they were exempted from these requirements. The Next Generation Climate Roadmap Bill took a very good and positive step forward by establishing an MLP Greenhouse Gas Emission Standard, or GGES for short. And this is a huge step. It essentially requires that MLPs slowly transition, or I should not say slowly, but that they transition to 100% or net zero by 2050. And there are interim targets that they have to meet in 2030 and 2040. But it is worth noting that this is a little bit less prescriptive than a policy like the RPS. And by prescriptive, I mean it includes a wider array of resources. So, you know, what applies under this greenhouse gas emission standards include resources like nuclear, like high efficiency gas, things like that. So it is different, but definitely we've seen positive progress in this regard. Another area that I think doesn't get enough attention, I think the RPS and the Clean Energy Standard is discussed quite frequently, is that when it comes to energy efficiency programs, the regulations and requirements are quite different. So investor-owned utilities, as of 2008, they really had strict requirements. They had, you know, requirements around the percentage of their revenues that they needed to put towards energy efficiency. The amount of money that they kind of allocated that was going towards low-income residents, specific energy savings goals, et cetera. There really are a number of requirements that these investor-owned utilities have to meet. And that is very different from MLPs. While there are some minimal standards that MLPs have to meet, the requirements are far less prescriptive. And that is in no means to say that MLPs are not doing great work in energy efficiency. It's just to say that they're not required to do this work legally. And so again, this gets back to my central idea, is you as a member of an MLP, you have a much larger capacity and ability to make change and take action that results in something at your local level. And also in some ways a responsibility, because without that action, MLPs may not be going as fast as we might like them to, or you might like them to in your community specifically. And this is one of the things that MCAN really works to support is, you know, it's important that advocates understand what action is taking place, because it's not a standard across the board, you know, what action is taking place in their community. And one of the ways that we've been doing that is through our MLP scorecard, which is something that we publish every other year. And it tracks and scores MLPs' progress in various different categories, such as energy transition, energy efficiency, transparency and community engagement, which we believe is such a foundational part of climate action and a just transition. And so, as I mentioned, we do score MLPs, you know, based on this progress, but scoring is really not the key part of our report. What we really like to highlight is the broader results and conclusions that were drawn from an analysis of the 41 MLPs across Massachusetts, as well as the recommendations. We really try to provide residents and community members with a guide for if you want to get involved, if you want to be a part of your light board, and you know you want to put forward a policy. There are some ways that you can kind of take a look at our resources and then decide, okay, this is the best thing that I can advocate for in my community. So I'll put the link to that in the chat, and you can take a look at that after this presentation. But I hope this gives you a little bit of an idea of kind of what MLPs are and why local action is so important. And
so there you go. We want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So thanks for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.